And welcome to everybody else. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for coming today. It's always just such a pleasure to be back and to be with you. The Sangha is such a special Sangha. Been around for so long, and to be part of it, to be able to come when you can come, and I get to be here periodically, it is just a pleasure, and it's a really important part of my life. So for those of you whom I haven't met, as you know, my name is Heidi Born, and I am doing this practice because I love it, because it's changed my life, because I find it to be completely foundational in everything that I do. As Tolan said, I've been teaching for a long time. My primary teachers are Sylvie Boorstein and Donald Rothberg, which is why I have the distinct honor of getting to be here when neither one of them is here. I have a background in small business. I have a background in nursing. And here I am today teaching Dharma, which is really, I think, the best culmination of all of my background as a small business person, as a nurse, as a mom, as a wife, as a grandmother, all of those things. It's just real life. How do we connect our everyday lives into the Dharma? Or how does the Dharma actually move through us and inform our everyday lives, which is really what is so alive and important, I think, that we do this practice so it actually becomes woven into our lives. It's not just some conceptual thing that we're thinking about. So that's a little bit about me. I live in rural Northern California in Arcata, which is up in the Redwoods on the coast. And I would love to know if you would like to just chat in where you are coming from today so we get a sense of our community and where we are all calling in from. You could just chat it in. Anybody can start if you feel like it. The Mesa and Reno, Memphis, Boston, Chicago, from the UK, Larkspur, East Bay, Bolinas. I know Audrey's here from France, which is always such a delight. Israel, Mariana, thank you for being here in Albuquerque. Okay. Somebody's here from Ferndale. Who's that? Ron, welcome. Ferndale's not very far from where I am. Ohlone land, yes, thanks, Gail. And I am on the Wiat land, Mill Valley. Thank you for doing that. So we're all over the place. This is wonderful. Tolan, where are you? Do you want to say where you are so people, folks know?
Sure. I am in Brooklyn, New York, on the land of the Lenape people.
Thank you. Okay. So thank you for doing that, everybody. I appreciate it. And the other thing that I want to invite us all to do is just take a look at each other. This is our Sangha this morning. And it is wonderful if you can leave your video on so we can actually see one another. It's very, very sweet to see one another. And as Tolan said, if you're doing something that would be distracting to others, of course, turn your video off for the time being. But if it can be on, it's really lovely to see you. Okay, so with that, how our morning is going to go, we're going to begin with a short arriving meditation, and then I'll offer some thoughts after the arriving meditation, then we'll have our longer meditation, then we'll have a break, and then a longer Dharma talk, and always plenty of time to talk with each other. So let's begin and just turn the awareness inward for a few minutes. Dropping down into the body, into the breath. Arriving. Letting each inhale be an arriving, each exhale a settling. And perhaps allowing the exhale to be a little longer than your natural length of an exhale, just as a way to settle in. To more deeply arrive, letting anything that you've been doing this morning before class just go off to the side. It'll be there later. coming into this moment, this breath. Welcoming yourself into practice today with one another, into our Sangha. Sensing the body connected to whatever you're sitting on. Perhaps you're reclining or standing, feeling the connection to the ground, to the earth. And then checking in with both the state of heart this morning, the state of mind, and knowing that whatever state you find yourself in, mind, heart, body, it's what's here right now, letting it belong, being right here. Welcoming it all. If you're noticing any holding in the body, the face, the jaw, the neck or shoulders, or even chest or belly, see if you can release any holding, any amount, with each exhale. So you're holding just enough energy in the back body to be present and aware, but softening the front of the body into a soft receptivity. I'm going to offer you a reflection question to drop into this arriving meditation. What have you noticed? What has given you pause lately? Either pleasant, unpleasant, wholesome, unpleasant, unwholesome. Something that made you pause. How did you respond to it? Was there reactivity or was there a more balanced response? And what supported your process? So not to get off in a long analytical exploration here, but just what has given you pause lately? How did you respond and what supported your response, your process? Thank you. good morning again. Welcome back. So I asked that question, and I'm hoping that some of you will be willing to share a little bit. But the reason I asked that question is because 3 of the 4 last weeks of this class, we've been talking about faith, confidence, and trust. So if you've been here, you know that the last 2 weeks, Donald really looked at this whole part of our practice of cultivating faith and confidence and trust, and then looked at what gets in the way and what to do about that. The week before that, Sylvia was here. And then the week before that, I was here, and I also talked about faith, and we took it apart step by step. And so I'm wondering, how do these topics stick with you from week to week? Do they inform your experience? And so that question, has something given you pause lately to say, huh, maybe it's something difficult, maybe it's not something difficult. But did you notice how our practices of looking at confidence, faith, and trust, has it informed your experience at all to see how it actually works? Because this is the pith of the practice. We're not just talking about conceptual ideas. What we want to do is actually be integrating this in our lives. So I'm wondering if anybody would like to say anything about this. So we'll move into our meditation now. We'll sit for about 25 minutes and then we'll pause after that. So please find a posture that works for you, that holds your body, where your mind can be steady, where your heart can soften. Beginning with sensing down into the body, noticing those contact points, the places your body meets, furniture, whatever you're connected to. Breathing right there, right in and out of those contact points, if you can, to sense that groundedness. Maybe even noticing the places the body is touching itself. Perhaps your hands are clasped or resting gently in the lap. Or even noticing the touch of the eyelids if your eyes are closed. The touch of the tongue inside the mouth. And once again, holding just enough strength and energy in the back body to stay wakeful and attentive. And softening the whole front of the body so there's room to breathe, room for the heart. And perhaps offering yourself this little blessing, little intention, may I be grounded in my body. May I be grounded in my body. And then drawing the attention into the heart center, the space of the heart, perhaps the chest, the upper back. If it's helpful to even place a hand on your heart for just gentle soothing of this heart space. Imagine breathing some fresh energy into the heart from every direction. Breathing back out into every direction, warming the heart, letting the heart become present, maybe even a little more spacious. May my heart become open, soft, and stable. Offer that to yourself. May my heart be open, soft, and stable. And then becoming aware of the mind space, knowing whatever state of mind is present in this moment, from completely engaged to completely disengaged, or at ease, or distracted, whatever it is. May my mind become clear and balanced, letting the energy of the mind turn inward. May my mind become clear and balanced. And then sensing into the breath. Wherever you feel it, however you feel it, is just the right way. Sensing the inhale and then the exhale. And even noticing where in the body you sense your breath the most. Could be the belly or the chest or the air going in and out of the nostrils. Just noticing the motion of the body in response to the breath. May I breathe with ease. May I be grounded in the body. May my heart be open, soft, and stable. May my mind become clear and balanced. In this moment, may I breathe with ease. So finding that place where you can settle your attention most easily, be it the body, a sensation, the breath, or perhaps a phrase, and stay there. Come back when the mind wanders and begin again, gently, kindly, yet persistently, and we'll sit quietly. If you notice any amount of ease or stillness arising as the mind settles, enjoy that. Notice perhaps a comfortable mind, a comfortable breath, and let it flow inside of you, not holding too constricted. Just let this quiet that's emerging emerge, staying steady with the body or the breath, but also a quality of allowing. If the mind is sleepy or distracted, see if you can bring the energy a little closer in, noticing the breath a little more carefully, noticing sensation to either calm the distractedness, refocus, or to bring the energy up if there's sleepiness. Sometimes opening the eyes for a few seconds is helpful to bring the energy up. And if there's too much restless energy, turning the awareness down into the body, sensing again the groundedness of the body connected to the earth to stabilize restless energy. And at the same time, staying soft, yet aware, relaxed. And once again, drawing the energy into the heart center, really sensing into any amount of warmth of your own heart, knowing its goodness, its fundamental goodness. We'll move into our practice of metta that is part of the tradition of our Sangha. And each person has the ability to unmute and offer out whoever you may be thinking of who is going through either a difficult time or some beautiful part of their life that you are rejoicing in. And you can just speak, you can unmute yourself as you're ready. And I'll begin. I'm thinking of a very dear friend who is living inside of cancer and working hard to navigate it, holding her with a lot of love and care. Who are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of my friend Boodle, who just had back surgery yesterday and is home recovering. And I have a little concern for her. Her husband died recently, and she's basically at home alone. And I am providing as much support as I can for her. And I know she's got good neighbors and friends nearby that will help her. So I hope her recovery goes well.
I'm thinking of my dear friend who just lost her dog, her loving companion. At the same time where her Parkinson's disease is moving quickly. And I'm also thinking of a nephew of mine who just had the strength and the courage and the trust to come out announcing that he's gay and introducing his boyfriend, and we celebrate his strength.
I'm thinking of, I'm thinking of my daughter. She is 15 months old and she truly lives life in the present moment. She's such a lesson for me every day. And I hope I can, you know, just help her preserve that and just be in the moment and learn from her and take little life lessons as I watch her.
I'm thinking
of my partner who has cancer that may be progressing more markedly at this time, with much love and giving him all the support that I can.
I'm thinking of my friend Vicky, who I talked a bit about last week, who will actually probably give birth tomorrow, and that's a big one, bringing life, hopefully very healthy life, and into this world.
Well, thank you, everybody. May all of our prayers and wishes for others, may they all be so. May we hold ourselves kindly as we hold others kindly. So we'll take 5 minutes now. And then reconvene at 11, 1 minute after the hour, wherever you are. So welcome back, everybody. I want to talk today about one of the Buddha's lists. There's so many lists, right, that are really helpful, that give us a framework for practice. They can give us a framework for our lives. And this is a list called the five spiritual strengths, or the five spiritual faculties. And I chose to work with this and talk about this today because we've spent so much time talking about faith, and faith is the first of these faculties. And the others are energy, mindfulness, concentration or stillness, and wisdom. And it's a very beautiful list, and I want to take it apart for us a little bit, although I'm not going to talk about faith for more than just a minute or so. So again, the list is faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And if you could imagine, one of the metaphors that is given for this list is like a team of horses, with mindfulness being the lead horse. And then the pair that's behind mindfulness is faith and wisdom. And then the rear pair, energy and concentration. And so the reason this metaphor, this image is given, is that when faith and wisdom and then energy and concentration are in balance, and they're balancing each other, mindfulness in the lead is effortless. So if you think about that, that the engine of what drives our awareness, our faith, wisdom, energy, and concentration, and then the mindfulness doesn't get constricted. The mindfulness is effortless. It just happens. We build this greater capacity to have this awareness all the time. And the other thing that I think is beautiful about this list, which I think also exists in other lists, is that how each one of these, faith, wisdom, even mindfulness, concentration, and energy, each one naturally becomes both the cause and the condition for the other to arise. So as faith is strong, then there's a capacity for this confidence and trust. We can put some energy behind it. But if energy isn't strong, what do we need when the energy is low? Maybe a little more confidence and trust, and then the energy can come up. And then when the energy is strong, faith and trust doesn't have to be out in the forefront. It's stable. It's just there. Same thing for energy, for wisdom, for concentration. Each one of these things supports each other, just like every other part of our practice. It all supports each other. So again, faith brings forth the energy to practice, to be here. There's some wisdom that is happening within that. We trust it. It's wise to trust the practice. And that thing about the faith is that you already have it because you're here. You wouldn't be here if you didn't have some kind of trust and confidence in this practice. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't falter. You know, there's faith in the teachings, there's faith in the teachers, and faith in oneself. And that's the most important one, is having the faith in oneself, in your own practice, in your own experience, and trusting that. And as that kind of, this faith is, this trust, confidence is strengthened, it helps diminish the hindrance of doubt. Why am I doing this anyway? Everybody's so much better at it. Or what Gail said, this practice doesn't work. You know, that's the doubt. But then, you know, when then you don't say something nasty to the store clerk, oh yeah, right, it really does work, right? So that piece of doubt that arises is then diminished by another action that we take. So faith. We've all been deeply studying this for a few weeks now. So then let's talk about energy. How does energy work in this? Now, energy, the Pali word for energy here is virya, V-I-R-I-Y-A. And it is literally the oomph that is behind what we are doing. This is different than effort. Like, wise effort on the Eightfold Path has to do with knowing the difference between wholesome and unwholesome states of mind, the effort we make to know what is happening. From the perspective of these five spiritual strengths, this is a little bit different. This is actually the literal energy that we need to bring to our bodies, into our hearts and our minds to be present. And faith helps propel us forward. It's a quality of engagement. I think that that's the way I like to think about this quality of energy, is how engaged are we actually with the present moment or with what we're doing at all? And we need to continually balance this energy so it's not too tight and it's not too loose, so we can keep going. And every time in meditation, you may notice that I often talk about the gentle persistence. Keep at it. This is the energy that we need to cultivate this clear mind, to support the mindfulness. And so, you know, there are different ways of relating to how much energy do I need to bring to anything? How do I stay balanced? And I used to do a lot of rowing, and where I live off of Humboldt Bay, I used to row a lot, both in an eight seat rowing shell and also a single scull. And I much prefer to row on my own in a single scull because I'm really not a competitive person. And rowing in an eight is a competitive sport. But I was doing it recreationally for a while because it's a beautiful sport and it's a lot of fun. But I never quite had the oomph, the engagement to have that competitive edge. And when you're rowing, if you don't stay really engaged, the boat doesn't stay on keel. You really have to physically, literally engage your body, work to balance through the legs, the feet, the core, the whole thing. And not only that, but to stay in sync with everybody else, because otherwise you have no keel. It's a mess. And I used to think about when I couldn't stay on keel and I was my oar blades were choppy, I was creating my own friction. And it was this metaphor I started working with about how we create our own suffering by creating, not working with the whatever the conditions are and making a difficult thing more difficult. But if I could stay grounded and centered and clear and trust my boatmates and have confidence in myself, I could actually stay more on keel, which is the metaphor, obviously, that I'm thinking about for how we think about this energy. But here's the thing. I was sloppy because I wasn't competitive. I basically didn't care. I just wanted to be out there having fun. I didn't care if we won the race or not. But the other people in the boat did, and the coach did. And so I needed to get myself together. And I remember one time, if you've ever done this sport, there's the coach is typically in another boat on the water with the big bullhorn yelling at you. And I'm not a yeller. I'm just like, I just wanted to have some fun. And it's a beautiful sport. And one day, coming through this huge megaphone, this coach yelled at me, "Born!" And nobody calls me by my last name. I mean, what a weird thing to even think about it. But "Born, put something on it." And I thought, okay, I better put something on it. And what he meant is like, get it together, you know, get engaged, engage your body, get your energy in there. And it was great because I've never forgotten that loud instruction. And sometimes in meditation practice, we need to put something on it, right? You know, we're just floating all over the place and we're not engaged. The energy is lacking. And when we don't put something on it, the mind does not become clear. The heart is unstable. The whole thing. And so it's a great metaphor for how do we really come into cultivating this clarity and balance of mind and heart grounded in the body. So when we add some courage and effort and energy, it gives us a much better chance of maintaining an even keel in choppy, uncertain water. And we have plenty of choppy, uncertain water in our lives. So I've worked with that metaphor quite a lot in my own practice, that our lives are like that, right? They're choppy, they're uncertain. And when we apply some energy and effort, we're more likely to stay on keel. Again, not too tight, not too loose, just right. And the Buddha actually used an analogy for this, like tuning a stringed instrument. if you tune the strings too tight, they'll break. You won't get a tone. But if they're too loose, you can't get a tone either. It doesn't work. So working with your own energy in your practices of awareness, how do you stay right at that place? The gas pedal is another one. How much oomph do you put on? When do you break? Stephen Hawking, he says, remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. And however difficult life may seem, there's always something you can do and succeed at. It matters that you don't just give up. It matters that you don't just give up. And so how do we take that? You know, look around, stay curious, let wonder and awe be part of what you are experiencing. Don't give up. This is this quality of energy. And then mindfulness. Let's move to the third aspect of these five strengths. So, well, I imagine that at this point, we all have some working definition of what mindfulness is for you. And I redefine it and redefine it and redefine it all the time. And no matter how you define it, you're right, right? Like you know that you understand what it is. Like you can't get the question wrong. What is mindfulness? I mean, I guess you can, but I imagine within our Sangha here, we all have a pretty good sense. So this lineage that we are in here is the lineage of Vipassana that comes from the Theravadan tradition of Buddhist practice. And Vipassana means clear seeing or insight. This is what we want to do, is cultivate a stable, steady mind that becomes clear so insights arise. But in order for that to happen, there's a quality of mind that is required, and this is called sati, S-A-T-I. And sati is the Pali word that is often translated as mindfulness. And sometimes mindfulness is, or sati is translated as remembering to remember. It's not just being right here, presence of mind, but sati is actually a condition of mind that comes before the mindfulness. It's a quality of mind that leads to the capacity to be aware. Does that make sense to you? Tell me, you know, if this doesn't, just say so, and I'll talk about it a little bit more. Does it make sense, Anne? Yeah? Okay, so what I love about this quality of sati, it's often talked about as a soft receptivity. Can we have a receptive mind, an open, curious, willing, nimble mind that can actually take in what it becomes aware of? So this is why sati is this quality of mind that needs to exist for the mindfulness to be present. That's how I relate to it. The mindfulness is the open, curious, non-reactive, non-judgmental quality of mind that lets us ask questions like, what am I aware of? What is happening here? It can be very elemental, becoming aware through the senses, sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, thinking. So this is this presence of mind that is available to us without the interfering commentary. But sati, the soft receptivity, is what needs to be there first. And then with the sati present, with mindfulness strong, then insight can arise, the true flourishing presence of Vipassana. One of my favorite definitions of mindfulness came from somebody in a class one day. I asked the question, Okay, everybody, let's all just popcorn style, just put into the room, what is mindfulness? And remember, you can't get it wrong. So people said all kinds of things, presence, balance, awareness, and it went on like that. It was wonderful. We got this great list. And then somebody said, choice. And I just loved that because I think it's really true. When the sati is there and the mindfulness, the awareness is stable, whatever happens, we are present enough, grounded enough to know that we have a choice of how we respond. Reactivity is then very quiet, but responsiveness is available to us. And that's where choice comes in. And I think that's what I so love about this practice is that the clearer I am, the better choices and decisions I can make. So that's how I relate to mindfulness. And then the next on this list of the five spiritual strengths is concentration or stillness, the gathered and collected mind. And this is what happens through our practice of meditation, of course. And I know you know this. So this creates this stability of mind, which leads to seeing into the truth of impermanence, the truth of dukkha, that life is challenging for everybody, how our responses to our lives can either increase our suffering or decrease our suffering or increase our well-being. It also sees into the truth of not self or interconnection, the ripple effects, the truth of karma. And so how we work with mindfulness and concentration, Thanissaro Bhikkhu, who is a Theravada monk in Southern California, he says, mindfulness is what keeps remembering where to stay focused and what to keep doing. Concentration is what maintains the steadiness of your gaze. This is a good distinguisher. I appreciate this a lot. Mindfulness is what keeps remembering where to stay focused and what to keep doing. Concentration is what maintains the steadiness of your gaze. And of course, it requires some confidence and trust. It requires some energy. Another way to say that whole thing is aim and sustain. Direct your awareness to one particular thing or maybe the bigger choiceless awareness, but stay there towards this steadiness. The other outcome of all of this, I think, is that it keeps us very connected to what's important to us and probably to our fundamental values. So here's a piece from Karen Mazin Miller. She is a Zen priest in Los Angeles, and this is from her book called Paradise in Plain Sight. It's a very beautiful book. These days, I want nothing more than to enter an empty room with a group of strangers and sit still and quiet in samadhi, non-distracted awareness, for the better part of the day. I'm always astonished by the presence of people who would dare do such a thing, burn perfectly good daylight to get nothing done. To take responsibility for peace in your world is genuinely heroic. Practicing meditation can be hard on your body and your mind, but it doesn't hurt anyone. No one is harmed by your practice. Indeed, everyone is helped. When you are still, no eyebrows are arched, no fists are clenched, no fingers are tapped, no sideways glances are given. When you're quiet, nothing mean, cruel, or critical is said. We have the power to transform everything when we have the courage to do nothing. Now, we know we're not doing nothing when we're sitting in meditation. We're doing a lot. But we have the power to transform everything when we have the courage to take responsibility for peace in our worlds, to train our minds towards this steadiness, to train our hearts towards also this stability, this openness, so we can act in our lives in a way that is really wholesome. it becomes the path of non-harming, and it leads us into wisdom. Because ultimately, this is a wisdom practice. When I think about what is wisdom, wisdom is this, the one who knows, as Ajahn Chah, the teacher of Jack Kornfield, talked about, that part of us that knows. So let's talk about this next piece on this list, which is wisdom. Wisdom arises. This is the insight that arises out of the concentrated, stable mind when faith and concentration and energy and mindfulness are in balance, the wisdom arises. So this is how each one of these is the proximate cause and condition for the other to arise. So you can ask yourself a question. Here's some questions that lead to this deeper knowing. What do you know to be true? What do I know to be true? And you don't need to answer that question necessarily. These are reflection questions to drop in. You know, and sometimes we can really question, what do I know to be true? Sometimes our lives get shaken and the uncertainty is on high. And what we can count on might seem elusive. What supports your well-being? Asking yourself that question will tap into your fundamental wisdom. How are you relating to these three universal facts of experience of impermanence, dukkha, the suffering, and karma, or interconnection? Just spending time thinking about those will take you into a place of your own wisdom. What can you release that will decrease your suffering? What can you let go of? And can you know, can you discern the difference between wholesome and unwholesome states of mind and heart? Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. But the more we do, the more access to our natural wisdom we have. The Buddha gives us a really wonderful compass question. And that question is, what when I do it will be for my long-term welfare and happiness? That is a fantastic question. What when I do it will be for my long-term welfare and happiness? Because it is essential that we train in keeping perspective and the long view. When we keep a longer view, we tend to get better answers when we're stuck or even when we're not. It doesn't mean that we don't make choices for the short run. Of course we do. But to always have that ability to say, what's the big picture here? What really supports my well-being? What supports your well-being? And let's go in that direction. I was at a retreat many, many years ago at Spirit Rock that one of the teachers was Mary Grace Orr. And she was talking about wisdom. And she said, you know, one of the questions I ask myself when I'm stuck is, what would my 85-year-old self tell me to do? What would my 85-year-old self tell me to do? Because we hope that when we're 85, and maybe some of us are, that we are in the fullness of our wisdom. But what she was saying is it's already here. Already here. And that's a line, a teaching line that Joseph Goldstein gives us. Maybe when we're floating around and restless, what do I do next? It's already here. Helps the doubt volume go down. But it also lets us know that we are already wise. We are already wise. What would my 85-year-old self tell me to do? So think about this process of how we access this wisdom, how the faith comes around, the energy, the concentration. This is what Gil Fronsdal, another Bay Area teacher, says about this whole list and wisdom. A mind that's confident, this is the faith, engaged, energy, mindful and focused, the concentration, can develop discernment, or wisdom, the fifth faculty. Discernment helps us determine which movements of the mind and heart, which thoughts and feelings are useful. What can we let go of? What should we develop further? With discernment, we begin to take responsibility, not just for our behavior, but also for our mind and what it does. I love that part. We notice what is or is not conducive to greater peace. If the way a person practices creates stress, then mindfulness and discernment will show that. As the mind settles down, we begin to learn how to let go of unskillful thoughts, feelings, and motivations. The process of practice is self-correcting. It guides the mind to greater peace and freedom. That really strikes me, that the process of practice is self-correcting. If we are really engaged with our practice, paying attention, present, that will self-correct. It will help balance the faith. It will help bring the wisdom out, keep the energy on keel, keep the mindfulness strong, and the mind steady, this stillness, this concentration. So again, bringing that image up of the team of horses in perfect balance. Mindfulness at the front, completely supported by faith, wisdom, energy, and concentration. And so the mindfulness becomes effortless. It becomes the default setting. And I think that's where we're going with our practice as we continually practice over and over again and understanding it in a deeper and deeper way. It becomes the default setting. It's not something we do. It becomes how we are, who we are. And we have to keep going. We have to keep going. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, just do two things. Begin and keep going. Begin and keep going. And to balance that with a beautiful teaching from Shinzen Young, he says, do not struggle with yourself at any level. Do not fight with yourself at any level. Can you begin and keep going and try not to fight with yourself? Because then we can be present for it all and we will be in balance.